What is up, everyone? Welcome to our little weekly podcast here at Fandango. My name is Eric Davis. I'm a contributing editor here at Fandango. I'm also used to be an X-Man. My powers were that girls at bars would never like to go home with me.
That's a terrible gift.
That was a horrible power. And I'm glad that I was able to go see a wise Japanese man who was able to strip me of that power. And I was able to find my wife, and everything has been great so far. You're also listening to Sean O'Connell. He is my co-host here. What's up, Sean?
Hey, Eric. This has been a really busy week if you've been on Fandango for trailers. We're talking about this assault of new clips and new footage from movies that we're really anticipating. I guess we're getting closer to the summer blockbusters. Iron Man 3 has had a boatload of TV spots. We got our first look at White House Down. And then the one that hit most recently are international trailers and domestic trailers for The Wolverine. And I think we both come at it from different angles.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what I was alluding to in my opening shtick there. But yes, the two trailers for The Wolverine have hit, and it looks to be about Wolverine going to Japan to meet with a man whose life he saved, and this is also a man who promises him that he can rid him of this sort of problem that he has, because he hates being the Wolverine, and he's saying, we can get rid of that, and you can get rid of being the Wolverine, and he doesn't believe him. And of course, while this is happening, he's fighting ninjas and he's on top of a train, and there's a Japanese love interest. And so, yeah, a lot of mixed reactions on this. I'm mixed on it.
Okay.
You really liked it. So I want to start with you. This is where we're going to start the podcast today, and then we're going to get into talking a little bit about G.I. Joe and what's coming out this weekend. But let's start with the Wolverine trailer. What did you like about it?
I liked the fact that it feels like they're going back to – and again, let me just preface it by saying it's ridiculous to judge a movie on the trailer, because often trailers look like they're going to be great and the movie disappoints when it plays out in full. But there's enough inside these two trailers that make me think that James Mangold, the director, is on to the right tone, at least for what I want to get out of a standalone Wolverine film. And, you know, Hugh Jackman, every time a new Wolverine movie comes out, he promises fans that this is the one that they got right. And we're going to stop believing him after a while. He can't keep saying that, but it feels like to me this is the one that's going to get closest to the type of Wolverine movie that I've always been hoping that they do, which is rooted in this character who's conflicted by the fact that he has this healing power that's allowed him to become essentially immortal. Nothing can really hurt him physically, but emotionally he's a wreck of a man because he outlives all of these opponents and he makes these emotional bonds with these characters who they show in the trailer, his Japanese love interest. We see the Jean Grey cameo, so that's not a surprise anymore. I think this movie's set, everything seems to say that this movie's been set after X-Men The Last Stand, so he's been through the Phoenix saga and he lost Jean Grey, and he's really just gone back to becoming this feral, isolated character who just wants to be left alone. But the fact that they're going to go pretty strong into the you can potentially get rid of your X-Men gene, to me, is a callback to the Bryan Singer movies, the first two Bryan Singer X-Men, which were very focused on a cure and whether you could ever heal yourself of the mutant ability. And if you could do it, would you do it? Or would you, you know, sort of just still embrace the fact that you have this genetic mutation, it makes you special, it gives you this power? And I think Wolverine is the perfect candidate to keep exploring that notion because, you know, he's going to get tired of becoming this lone wolf warrior who's constantly on the move and can't connect to humanity because of this gift that he has. And I think that they're going to try and explore that in this film. I also thought it looked really good. I like the cinematography in it. I think Japan is a very photographic city that could become a really exciting character in the movie itself. I admit that the bullet train footage looked really, really chintzy, and I'm very surprised that they can still get away with cheesy-looking special effects in a comic book property nowadays. But look, the Kick-Ass trailer had that really green-screeny-looking fight on the van, too. So, you know, some of these studios are still trying to cut corners a little bit. But for the most part, it felt like, and especially in the international trailer, it felt like the kind of Wolverine movie that I'm hoping to see.
I mean, your description of it sounds a lot better than what I was feeling when I watched the trailer. Okay. I do agree with some of what you said. I think that this was a film a lot of the Wolverine fans were looking forward to. It's a comic storyline, a comic arc that I think is the most popular in Wolverine mythology. And yeah, I mean, the problem with this story is that it does feel a little been there, done that. How many times can we follow this, you know, miserable Wolverine to some other place where he's miserable and beating right. people up? I mean, so I do like how it is set in Japan. I think I really like that aspect of it. Some scenes in the trailer, though, felt a little small for its setting. And maybe it's because it wasn't filmed in Japan. It was filmed on lots in Australia to make it right. look like Japan. And it kind of felt like a set when I was watching the trailer. And then the high-speed train fight completely took me out of it.
I can't argue that.
You know,
it does look
and it's difficult. You know, and you know why that's difficult is because we come only a few months after Skyfall had a tremendous train sequence to open up that film. And here's this Wolverine train sequence that just feels completely computer-created,
right.
computer-generated.
And we can't accept that anymore. Nowadays, we can't accept it.
No.
It's too many other films are doing these stunt sequences, these, you know, mind-blowing, visually spectacular stunt sequences that when you see a bad one now, it feels like you've been in a time machine back to the 80s, and it's just not acceptable anymore.
Yeah, and they also – I mean, they looks like there's some cool fight scenes in it. It's funny. I tweeted right afterwards that the trailer immediately reminded me of the scene from Superman 2 when Clark Kent gets rid of his powers,
right.
goes to the diner. And a truck driver, you know, throws him through a glass window, and he's like, "Oh, look, I have blood for the first time." You know, and there is kind of a scene in this trailer where Wolverine gets stabbed or he gets punched or something, and he, all of a sudden he's like, "Whoa, I'm feeling things I've never felt before,"
right.
And I think that is the interesting aspect to the movie. I don't know what happens in the film, but if they start removing powers from him. Bringing him closer to what I think he's always wanted to be, I'd like to see what's explored in that part of the movie, because I think it'll be a side of Wolverine we haven't seen yet, a very vulnerable side, especially with him surrounded in a world that's very unfamiliar to him, with a fun world to play out on screen. We have ninjas. Not only do we have ninjas, but we have gangs in there, and it seems like there's a lot of characters that they're going to throw at him.
Well, and Silver Samurai.
Yeah.
I mean, when we talk about the chief nemesis of each of these characters, you know, with Spider-Man, it's Green Goblin. And with Wolverine, it's Sabretooth. But I think Silver Samurai is another one from the books who fans have been waiting to see on screen and done properly. Because, you know, in the origin story, they rushed a couple of characters who should have been bigger introductions to the X-Men world, whether it's the Blob or obviously Deadpool, who people wanted to see in a Marvel movie. And they rushed them. And then they kind of ruined him for future films. And so if they get Silver Samurai right, he could be one who keeps recurring back, whether in an X-Men movie or in future Wolverine films. I hope that they get that character down the right way.
Yeah, you know, and it's curious to see. I'm definitely giving the film the benefit of the doubt. There are a lot of people that are very upset with these trailers today. And, you know, and it does kind of remind us a little bit. I go back to X-Men Origins Wolverine, which is a film that a lot of fans felt like they were let down by. I think I remember that first trailer ended with a similar scene that people criticized, like the train sequence, with him flying with on the motorcycle.
Oh, right.
Going towards a helicopter, some craziness, I forget. But and everybody was like, "What is this crazy scene?" And here they go, and they put the train at the end of this trailer. But I mean, look, I'm giving it the benefit of the doubt. I really like the setting. I like Mangold as a director. I said when I wrote this up that it does feel like a blend of his last two movies, Night and Day, with its over-the-top action sequences and the boy-girl action duo.
Right.
And 3:10 to Yuma, because it does have this grizzled, war-torn vibe to it. That's felt in that film, and I really enjoyed 3:10 to Yuma. I kind of like Night and Day. I think Mangold is a versatile director,
right?
And so I'm interested to see what he brings to it. Part of me would have liked to see Darren Aronofsky be director. He was supposed to direct this movie.
Right.
But I think that he probably wasn't allowed to go to the places creatively where he wanted to go. The problem with Wolverine is that – and specifically this storyline, it is very dark and it's very gritty. But at the end of the day, you need to make a PG-13 movie that's accessible to a very wide audience.
All right. And that's going to bring us right into our next point, which I think we should dive into, mm-hmm. which is taking these movies that – you know, Wolverine, it's still a comic book and it's still a character that I think kids are going to be interested in. And that brings us to G.I. Joe, which comes out this weekend, which is another movie kind of like Transformers that's based on a toy line but aren't necessarily movies that are geared at kids who are going to play with toys. I found a really interesting scenario this week where I was able to go to the G.I. Joe junket, and one of the things that they gave you to bring home were these two G.I. Joe toys that my kids, who are 9 and 5, they have not stopped playing with. It's a Roadblock who looks like The Rock, and it's Snake Eyes. And they don't know these characters. They've never gotten to know these characters. They didn't play with G.I. Joes growing up. They were more our era, probably. But, you know, and then so the next a natural step for them is, can we go see the movie? And having seen G.I. Joe, I thought it was a lot of fun, and I thought it was a big step up from the first movie. But it's definitely not something I would bring my kids to, because there's this combat element to G.I. Joe that's just natural to the characters. And the studio decided to go after a movie that is PG-13, you know, go after that audience, and is going to really buy into the thrills of a more grown-up PG-13 movie. It's a really tough line to walk, and you and I talked about this, of how you make the right kind of movie that's based on a very popular toy line but still accessible for crowds.
Yeah, and it's difficult too. And we also talked briefly about Independence Day versus White House Down and Olympus Has Fallen. White House Down is another new trailer that premiered this week, and the fact that you know, a movie like Independence Day is a lot of fun. And I also felt like that too in some of these movies based on toys growing up that were not nearly as successful as the films that are coming out like now, like The Masters of the Universe with Dolph Lundgren, based on He-Man. Right. But these movies were fun, first and foremost. I feel like the fun was put at the beginning, and then everything came after it. It's like it needed to be fun because kids that are playing with these toys, we want the kids, same kids that are playing with these toys, to go see the movie. But right. Now we're getting these movies like Transformers and, you know, to a certain extent, Battleship and G.I. Joe. And right. We're not saying they're bad movies. I think they're crafted to go after that what I call the quote unquote Dark Knight audience, you know, which is that 18 to 25 range, which is the crucial range when it comes to selling a movie. But in that, in appealing to that 18 to 25 year olds, we're missing I think the kids that are actually playing with these toys at home.
Right.
When they wake up in the morning and they're in the living room, like I was when I was growing up, I would go to a corner in my bedroom with all my G.I. Joe action figures, and sometimes I'd throw Superman and Batman in there just to get crazy with it, and kind of play with that. And like you're saying, you know, you have a 9-year-old son and he's right there when he's playing with action figures, and they're making these movies based on these action figures, and you're like, I don't know if I could take my kid to it because it's a little bit dangerous, it's a little bit gritty, it's a little bit too hardcore for my kid.
Right, exactly. I mean, there's a sequence in the G.I. Joe film where, you know, multiple Joes are – this isn't giving much away. This is, you know, setting up the plot where multiple Joes are sort of wiped away in an attack by Cobra. And I think when we were growing up, they might have gone after – campy is the wrong word because that implies a negative connotation. But movies nowadays just want to go for a little bit more realistic, and I don't know if I want these toy movies to be realistic. There are two projects that are on the horizon that I'm looking toward that I wonder how they're going to handle them, because we have a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movies that's, you know, suddenly casting people and Michael Bay is producing it and he's moving it forward, and there's a Hot Wheels movie that's sort of been languishing in pre-production for a long time. And you know, for a while, the Hot Wheels movie was going to be directed by McGee. I'm not even sure who's behind it right now. And he did the Charlie's Angels movies, which were fun action movies. They were overblown and a little bit cartoonish, but somewhat accessible, you know, for an audience that, for all ages almost. And I thought that Hot Wheels could go in that direction. But I don't know what they're going to do with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles one, if it's going to be grittier, if it's not going to be something that kids can go see.
Yeah, it just goes to show you how much influence The Dark Knight as a movie has had on the films that have come after it.
It changed everything.
It really changed everything. And while that movie is great, and I love that movie, and I do like how a lot of other franchises and other movies that they've launched have kind of taken a cue from that, and I think it's going to make the new Superman movie a lot better.
Right.
We're still missing now this aspect of, yeah, fun. The word fun is missing from a lot of these movies. I also think back to those two Fantastic Four movies. While they weren't as successful, I think, as you'd want a comic book movie to be, they were fun, first and foremost, those films.
Absolutely.
And that's what I really liked about them. Fantastic Four movies are movies you can bring your kids to.
Yes, I was a big fan of Rise of the Silver Surfer. Was it called Rise of the Silver Surfer? The second one that they did was really, really entertaining for kids. My boys loved the fact that at the end of them, and it sounded goofy, but the way that it played out, like where the Human Torch was able to absorb all of their powers into one thing in order to fight the Galactus storm that was coming. My kids loved that. They thought it was great.
Yeah, but the 19 and 20 and 22-year-old kids were like, this sucks. This is horrible.
It's cheesy.
And so now we have to go and reboot the Fantastic Four, and it's probably going to be this dark and gritty reboot that you can't take your 9-year-old to.
Right, that's frustrating.
So it's like, where do we find that balance? And is there a balance? Can we put fun back into these movies, into these toy movies, into these comic-based movies? Can we put fun? The Avengers, I think, out of all of these films, the Avengers is the one that's – the last one that's got it right. The Avengers was fun.
Yep, I totally agree with that.
The Avengers was not a film that you would shy away from showing your 9-year-old, because I feel like it first and foremost, Joss Whedon put fun before everything else.
And yet we were watching New York City get demolished, but still.
But but you know why? But there were like four comic relief moments in there.
Right.
In that scene, there was a ton of comic relief. There were a ton of just hero moments that you want to stand up and cheer. And like the destruction of New York City was very secondary. It wasn't like a Roland Emmerich film, like White House Down, where they just show you a 5-minute montage of your city being destroyed. You know, it was pieces of the city. You know, it was things exploding and stuff, but it was the characters. It was all about the characters, and not, look, let's show this, you know, 2.5-minute shot of the Empire State Building crumbling to the ground and freak everybody out that lives there, because that whole thing was secondary. The distraction was secondary to the characters.
Now, I know that they showed 8 minutes of White House Down in theaters in New York City yesterday to a select group of press, and people who went came out of it saying that there's a lot more humor in it than is probably shown in the trailer. So that gives me a lot of hope, you know, that it's more of a crowd pleaser, and not because I liked Olympus Has Fallen, but it was definitely a tough sit, because not even just the destruction of the White House and some really iconic landmarks in D.C., but it was just like the kills were really vicious. The violence was brutal. It was a dark and depressing kind of movie. And I think that White House Down, because Emmerich has done this before, might have a bit of a more of an uplift and a bit of a like a little more crowd pleasing vibe to it. At least I'm hopeful.
Yeah, I mean, I talk about the Avengers, Independence Day. I felt the same way. That movie is fun, first and foremost. Emmerich does love to destroy New York in that movie, but it's a lot of fun, and Will Smith brings a lot of fun to that character. And I'm curious to see if Olympus I'm already getting them confused, Sean. If White House Down gets that right. Let's segue into what's coming out this weekend and our picks. You go first.
Yeah, it sounded like I was kicking G.I. Joe around, and I don't mean to. As a father of two, I always come at it from that angle of, is this something I can share with my kids? I don't think so just yet, and I'll have a much longer when can I watch column up on both Fandango and Movies.com, where I'll sort of explain what the right age level is. But that doesn't mean that I didn't think that G.I. Joe worked, because I thought it was a lot of fun. It took what they laid out in the first movie that Stephen Sommers directed a few years back, which to me was too cartoonish. Even though it was based on a cartoon and based on a toy line, some of the scenes in it were just really too overblown and campy and a little bit cheesy. This makes it a little bit more realistic. And of course, it introduces the one element that makes every movie better nowadays, which is Dwayne The Rock Johnson. You can drop him into almost any franchise, and it just sort of makes it better for various reasons. And it's not that he's playing the same character every time. It's not like he's just playing the guy from Fast Five or – And I mean, if anybody saw the Red Band trailer for Pain and Gain, you can see that he can really do dark black comedy, too. He's just a really talented, charismatic actor, and the screen loves him, and he's great in G.I. Joe. But, you know, the action scenes are really good. They introduced Bruce Willis into the franchise, and he fits. He's much better here on screen than he was in the Die Hard sequel that we got earlier this year. So even if you were a fan of the first G.I. Joe, if you were hoping that the franchise sort of turned itself on the right foot and delivered a more entertaining sequel, I think that's what you're going to find this week. I think it's going to be a huge, huge hit. And just sort of dominate the box office for a couple weeks.
You know, I agree with you when it comes to Dwayne The Rock Johnson. I feel like if our generation has an Arnold Schwarzenegger, or this generation has an Arnold Schwarzenegger or Sylvester Stallone, it's Dwayne The Rock Johnson. I'm very surprised at how versatile he's become as a wrestler who turned into an actor. He's definitely a big surprise, and I'm glad to see what he's done with his career. And yeah, he's rejuvenating a lot of these franchises.
Absolutely.
And he's doing a good job with them. And so I'm curious to see where he goes next. My pick of the weekend is I've never expected myself to do this, but I'm going to recommend the Tyler Perry movie. Temptation. I'm going to recommend the Tyler Perry movie, Temptation. Okay. I think it is the date movie to go see this weekend. But one thing I like about Perry when he's not doing his over-the-top Madia character is he has a lot of interesting things to say about relationships in his movies that are about marriages and relationships. And this is another one that has some really kind of so a lot of truth. It speaks a lot of truth. It's not one of these relationship movies that you don't see happening in real life, like these romantic dramedies or romantic comedies that don't feel real. One thing Perry is able to do is he injects a truth into these films that I think speak to a lot of people and are therapeutic, I think, in some ways to some people in their relationships, and may even break up some people too. But I think it's worth seeing. It's got an interesting cast, but
I think you get consistency with Tyler Perry also. Mm-hmm. I mean, he has a core audience. A lot of times he reaches beyond them when he strives for, you know, bigger subject matter. He has a lot in similarity with Nicholas Sparks and the fact that you kind of know what you're getting from his films, but a lot of times they'll challenge you a little bit more to think different ways. And so, I've heard good things about Temptation.
Yeah. So I think, you know, if you're looking to kind of get away from the action and the teen stuff, give Temptation a chance. It looks pretty good. So that about wraps it up for this week. Sean,
we have a couple of different ones on the horizon next week. We're going to get into the Evil Dead reboot, and we're going to talk about whether Jurassic Park 3D is worth seeing on the IMAX.
Ooh, Jurassic. You know, I've been with Jurassic Park 3D. I've been watching randomly clips from the first one on YouTube this week, and that movie just changed my life, and I look forward to talking about it next week.
Oh, good.
So thanks a lot for joining us this week. If you've listened all the way through, I appreciate it. You are a good person. And join us next week when we talk about things like Jurassic Park and Evil Dead and how unbelievable gory that movie is. Sean O'Connell, thank you very much.
Always a pleasure.
For stopping by. And you know what? Everyone listening, enjoy your weekend at the movies and comment on this post and let us know what you go see and whether or not you like it. All right. Take care. Bye.